This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour. I'm Ross Chambliss. The Hinckley Institute recently held its third annual Hip Talks two-minute speech competition on the campus of the University of Utah. Students prepared to give a two-minute speech in front of a qualified panel of judges in one of three qualifying rounds, with a finale of the top speakers that was held on April 20th. The competition awarded significant cash prizes for the best speakers. You can find a link to watch a recording of all of the speeches on the webpage for this show. And today, for the first half of the program, I asked the winners of this year's competition to deliver their speeches again and share some background on their chosen topics. And later in the second half of the program, we'll be hearing from a former United Nations aid worker, Renuka Naj, who worked for a year in Juba, South Sudan. But first, to the Hip Talks winners. Student Hannah Fox was one of the runners-up in the recent two-minute speech competition. Here is her speech, titled, One Day the Pain Will Be Worth It.
My life started about 23 years ago, and in that 23 years, I have had over 20 surgeries. That means that I spent a lot of my time in and out of the hospital as a child. Growing up, I dreaded the hospital. I remember feeling fear and anxiety over the pain of the procedures, but also the fact that I knew that I was not going to be in control of what was going to happen to me. I also felt the pain of isolation, of being the only child that I knew that grew up through a timeline of surgeries marking childhood milestones. But even through all of the surgeries and the recoveries, I loved my childhood. I look back on it so fondly because today I know that that pain was worth it. It was worth it to go through it and emerge victoriously. Because fast forward to today, I have the most wonderful job working in the most amazing hospital that I grew up in, working with children who are growing up through the hospital today. The kids that I work with are the strongest, most resilient beings that I have ever met, but they are in a place that they do not want to be in. I can empathize with the hatred and the fear that they feel towards me, because to them, my scrubs represent pain and discomfort. I cannot take away their pain, and I cannot cure their isolation, but what I do know is that one day, their pain will be worth it. It will be worth it to benefit from the medical advancements to give us the best life possible, but it will also be worth it to survive and to thrive. The pain today will be worth it tomorrow. When we are in pain, it is almost impossible to see beyond it. But when we look back at the pain of yesterday that we have forgotten, we look back at how we grew from it. Because when we kick pain in the ass, we are stronger than it, and we are stronger because of it.
And that was Hannah Fox, one of the winning runners-up in this year's Hip Talks two-minute speech competition. Next, here is Jenica Jessen.
I'm a linguistics major, as will soon become obvious.
Her speech is titled Mountains, Barbarians, and Elmer Fudd.
3,000 years ago, the ancient Greeks encountered a people who didn't talk right. Rather than speaking like the rest of the civilized world, they used an incomprehensible language that sounded like bar, 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 bar. The Greeks, of course, decided to call these savages barbarians. One of the most universal biases we as humans possess is the assumption that people who don't talk like us are somehow different or less intelligent. It's no coincidence that the word dumb means both stupid and speechless, or that iconic idiot Elmer Fudd has a speech impediment. It's no coincidence that immigrants who don't speak English are seen as a nuisance or a threat, or that fictional racists often have southern accents. If a disliked group doesn't have any linguistic quirks, society will be happy to make one up. One of the most maligned features of Utah English is the pronunciation of the word mountain, even though Americans from Albany to Anchorage pronounce it without the T. Mountain is perfectly normal, but Utahns are hicks and Mormons and a little bit weird, so they have to talk differently. Compared to some groups, Utahns have it easy. African American vernacular English is in many ways more complex than general American, but black people are penalized for talking differently than white people. They have to dumb down their dialect to get anywhere professionally, and when they do, we call them articulate. This bias is everywhere because it's so deep-seated. We're hardwired to reject the unfamiliar, whether it's in the form of new foods, foreign faces, or distorted vowels. We make these judgments on a subconscious level in fractions of a second, and most of the time we don't even realize we're making them. The great thing about the subconscious, though, is once we figure out what it's up to, we can fight back. Once we notice the impulse to call someone a barbarian, we can think twice. So next time you encounter someone with a stammer, an accent, or a tendency to split infinitives, pay a little more attention to what they say, and a little less to how they say it. You might be surprised by what you hear. Thank you.
That was Jenica Jessen. Afterward, I asked Jenica about the inspiration for her speech.
Well, I'm very interested in language. I'm a linguistics major, obviously. And I've noticed, as I've studied it more and more, that a lot of people have this unconscious bias towards language, you know? It didn't really hit home to me until I started trying to learn Spanish, and I realized for the first time that English was not the default language the world ran on. And it shocked me that, A, this was true, and B, that I'd had this idea in the first place. I hadn't even realized I'd been thinking that way until I suddenly lost that belief. So I thought that it'd be a good idea to share with people a little bit about how this bias operates in our lives and what we can do to fight against it.
Great. And how long did this speech take for you to put together, to write?
I honestly wrote it in about an hour, and then I spent the next 2 or 3 weeks tweaking it. But the first draft didn't take very long.
And what did you feel like your reaction was after you've given it through different rounds? But what was your general reaction from your listeners, from the audience?
I've had a lot of people tell me they really enjoyed the speech because, again, they mentioned that this had never really occurred to them either. When I gave it to one of my roommates, she actually remarked, "I'd never realized how this permeates everything. All of a sudden, it's everywhere I look." So I feel like it did its job in that regard.
You got the message across.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Here is the next runner-up in the recent Hip Talks 2-Minute Speech Competition.
My name is Tulsi Station, and I'm a geography major. So I was doing an internship in the British House of Commons last summer, and I'd give people tours through the House of Commons and walk them past the green benches, but there was one bench, and it hadn't been sat on in a while, and instead, pinned to the back of the bench was a single, shriveled, wilting white rose. And that bench belonged to the Member of Parliament, Jo Cox, who was by all accounts an incredible woman. She had personally saved hundreds of refugees' lives in Darfur and in Afghanistan, and then come back to Britain and encouraged dozens of women to run for political office, and then finally run for office herself. And so this was Jo Cox's first year as a member of parliament, and it was also the year of the Brexit referendum. You could taste the tension in the air. It kind of tasted like the inversion. It wasn't that great. And Jo Cox was passionately pro-EU. So passionate, in fact, that she actually took part in Britain's first ever boat battle since 1600. This involved Jo Cox and a bunch of fishermen jumping on the river behind the Palace of Westminster and taking a bunch of water cannons and hosing down the boats of the Vote Leave supporters. You know, the most practical kind of political debate. Because Jo Cox was that kind of passionate, fiery politician who cared about her causes and her constituents, and Jo Cox is dead. She was stabbed 3 times and shot to death in her constituency 1 week before the referendum by an assailant, an assassin running at her yelling, "Britain first!" And he killed her for her beliefs, but more importantly, he killed her for daring to be pro-EU in a time of inculcated political hatred. In a time when you looked at someone who disagreed with you, and not only were they on the other side of the aisle, but they are scary, they are strange, they are different, and they need to go. And that environment of political hatred existed in Britain before the referendum and exists here in my America today, and it is so dangerous. Because when you allow for that sort of rhetoric, you don't just lose votes, you don't just lose elections. The cost is real human lives, until all we're left with is the shriveled, wilting memories of the people we might have been.
Tulsi Station's 2-minute speech is titled Britain First. I asked her to talk about how she wrote it.
Yeah, Yeah, so someone had asked me to write an essay a couple months ago about role models, and so I wrote about Joe Cox, and it was a hard process because I was thinking about like this person who really inspired me, who I never actually got the chance to meet, and I was wondering, I started thinking like, why did she lose her life? What caused this? You know, and is there a lesson we can take away from that? And you know, this was happening kind of the same time as Trump's presidency, and watching these really angry debates, and I was taking part in some protests and different things, but it was also. Sometimes it was healthy, but sometimes it was just really toxic, and like these thoughts about worrying about how we hate each other kind of in this country now, and also like remembering this woman who I really admire and see sort of as a role model, and bringing those ideas together and trying to take a message, at least just for me, out of it.
Yeah. You mentioned that you served an internship mm-hmm. over there, so this was a little more intimate for you and familiar, that being there and also this event.
Yeah, I remember... the day after she was assassinated, we all sat in Parliament. We had a window that kind of looked out on Westminster Abbey, and I remember watching all the members of Parliament walk across the street to go to her funeral, and then a couple minutes later, we heard singing echoing down the street as hundreds of MPs were crying and singing about this woman, and then finally, at the end of the procession, we saw her husband and her two little kids, and that was really hard because... You know, I was working with members of Parliament like her. These people were my friends. I could so easily imagine one of their families being at the end of that procession.
So 2 minutes is not a lot of time to express a lot, but what do you want people to take away from your speech?
I think for one thing, I just want people to be aware of the scale of the small tragedies that we cause. Like, your words have power and your words cause suffering. And so if at least you can think about the speech and the rhetoric that we're promoting and realize that it matters and that toning it down a little bit can save lives, like, I think that's what I'm trying to say.
Well, thank you very much for sharing your speech again.
Thank you.
Thulasi Seshan is a geography major at the University of Utah. And now for the final runner-up in the recent Hip Talks 2-Minute Speech Competition, this is Ramakrishnan.
Hi, I'm Ramakrishnan, and the title of my speech is An Uncherished Gift. All right, so I remember watching television last year, mainstream media, and people were going like, Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump are attracting huge crowds, 20,000 people, 30,000 people. And I was like, wait a minute, 20,000 is a crowd? A municipal election in India would get you 100,000 people easily. But throughout the past year, I have been reminded of something very important, something that we enjoy in certain parts of the world. The right and freedom to criticize powerful individuals. You can come on late night television and lambast the head of state. You can lambast powerful individuals, attack them, make an audience laugh, and have nothing happen to you. You see, it is important to recognize the imperfect nature of democracy. But it is even more important, I believe, to be grateful to our forefathers for setting up a system where you and I can talk about anything as long as we want. I know I just have 2 minutes. But in general, we can speak about anything as long as we want, as frequently as we want, and have nothing happen to us. The fact that we can talk about things that we don't have means that we already have something unique. The right to speak about things that we don't have. Long live this freedom of speech. Long live democracy. God bless America. Thank you.
And that was Ramakrishnan with his speech, An Uncherished Gift. He spoke about his speech afterward.
Hi, I'm Ramakrishnan. I'm a graduate student at the University of Utah. I study at the David Eccles School of Business. I'm doing PhD in marketing there. And the reason why I wanted to speak about this particular topic is that I have been amazed by the power and the uniqueness of democracy. And I don't say it in a philosophical sense. But in general, when I see the trends in different parts of the world and what happened in America over the past year in particular, the power of freedom of speech and the benefit that it provides is something not just amazing, but also unique to certain parts of the world. You cannot do this in all parts of the world. Some of the freedoms that we speak about here are unimaginable in most parts of the world. And I was amazed about it. So I felt like it is important as an outsider, as someone who comes from a foreign country, to remind people here that there is something unique, an uncherished gift that people have over here. Because if that gift was cherished, then people would be speaking about it and recognizing it far more often. So, yeah, that's why I call it an uncherished gift. It's an amazing gift, but it deserves to be cherished, and we have to be grateful to our forefathers for the same. Thank you.
You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCBW. Coming up in a moment, we'll hear from the audience favorite and the grand prize winner from this year's speech competition.
You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. For podcasts of more local shows and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org.
Welcome back to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Ross Chambliss. On this program, we record and broadcast the many engaging lectures, debates, and panel discussions held at the Hinckley Institute of Politics at the University of Utah, as well as some of the special events, such as HIP Talks, the two-minute speech competition held annually. The winner of the audience favorite award was Mackenzie Gregerson.
I'm Mackenzie Gregerson. I'm getting an MBA at the University of Utah David Eccles School of Business.
The title of Mackenzie's talk is Never Ending Story.
9 years ago this month, I woke to my mom screaming and my brother crying. I ran into the room and I heard something I've never heard before. It was the sound of death. My dad was dying. As the paramedics rushed in and took him away on a stretcher, all of the adults in the house left with him, leaving me in charge of 13 younger siblings and cousins. Out of town, in a place I'd never been, I have never felt so alone. 3 days later, I lay on an air mattress in the hall, hugging my dad's sweater and sobbing, because I realized for the first time, my dad would never know what school I went to or what I chose to study. He would never meet my husband or give me away. He would never hold my child. In that dark moment, I realized and was taught that every story has a happy ending. If it doesn't look happy now, it isn't over yet. People like to make fun with statistics and say things like, 100% of people who eat bread die, therefore bread causes death. Or, every person who has ever breathed has died, therefore breathing causes death. I propose to you that every person in this room is alive. And every person who is here will eventually die. Therefore, life causes death. Death is a part of life, like a period separates sentences and ideas. Death separates one period of life from another. It is a marker, a milestone, a miracle. You see, death is not the end. I stand here today because my story is not over. And neither is my dad's.
Mackenzie Gregerson's speech was awarded audience favorite. Here's how she describes her process of writing it.
If there's one word that I would sum up the topic of my speech and why I chose it, it's hope. It's that though bad things happen in this life, and sure, I'm not saying my life has got the hardest pieces in it or that my dad having an illness and dying is not the worst thing that could happen in the world, but the worst thing that could happen in the world is to lose hope in the future, to give up and stop moving. And I strongly believe that if we give up hope in each other, in our relationships, in our lives, in even life after death and our purpose here, then we lose sight of who we are and we can't accomplish the things we can accomplish if we maintain a perspective of hope.
This is a very obviously intimate and personal subject for you. So was it challenging to when you decided that you wanted to speak about this, or was it something that you felt already comfortable to do?
You know, that's a good question. Part of me feels like this is such an intimate moment. That moment on that air mattress was so incredibly personal and deep and intimate and vulnerable that I struggled with whether or not I wanted to share that over mass communication with lots of people. But I realized if we're not willing to be vulnerable and we're not willing to share the things that really make us who we are, then we won't ever know each other. And if we don't connect with each other, we can't become unified and we won't be a community. And so that's why I decided that I would share that story.
Speaking in public is difficult for anyone. Did you feel it was difficult for you giving the speech or not?
You know what's funny? I love public speaking. I absolutely thrive talking to one person or to many. 10,000 people doesn't scare me. Neither does one person. I feel like speaking, if we think that we're speaking to be judged by what we're saying, is scary. But I don't speak so that I can be judged by others or to wonder what people think about me. Instead, I feel like what can happen in this room if I provide a means to connect. And that's what I hope my words are.
Well, thank you so much for giving your speech for us again today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Again, that was Mackenzie Gregerson. Her speech was awarded audience favorite. Now, finally, the grand prize winner, Ali Darvish, recently recorded his speech titled Feeling Pretty.
When I was about 6 years old, I got into my mother's makeup and I proceeded to make myself look absolutely beautiful. When she came in and saw me with the red on my lips and the blue eyeshadow, she said, "What a beautiful boy." When I went to my father, he remarked, "Blue is your color." Then I went to school, and that's when the Hindenburg crashed. You see, I don't know what I expected, but it certainly wasn't humiliation. It was around that time that I learned about the Egyptians, how they wore makeup, men and women. Men wore eyeliner, women had goatees. Why couldn't I jump boundaries like them? And then I'm brought to think about the expectations we have today of men and women, how we expect them to react differently to the very same situation, and how we take that for granted. We say it's inherent. And yet, if we look at how other cultures compare, expect their men and women to react to the very same situation, we'll find it's profoundly different. And we'll find that these things that we once thought as inherent can actually be quite arbitrary, that these things can be socialized, social conventions. Now, of course, we need these social conventions to a certain extent. It facilitates socialization. It allows us to form expectations of others and allows others to form expectations of us. And that makes things much more fluid and makes us all more amiable, doesn't it? These expectations are good, but we really need to reevaluate these expectations. Because in a society where wages and wealth are so lopsided, where one burden is pushed so heavily onto one gender and another burden pushed so heavily on the other, when people who can't find their place within this dichotomy are completely alienated, and where something as petty as makeup on a man can be completely ostracizing, then we have a serious issue. If a woman decides not to shave her legs for a few days, people will look at her. Men, they'll say, monstrosity, actual words. And yet, do you know how nice it is to not have to shave your legs every day? I do. I would recommend it. If we're truly a society which seeks to promote individual liberty and the pursuit of happiness, then we have to open up the way to allow individuals to pursue their careers, their ambitions, their goals, independent of whether or not there's a phallus dangling between their legs.
Ali Darvish's speech, Feeling Pretty, was the grand prize winner in this year's Hip Talks 2-Minute Speech Competition held at the University of Utah. This program is made possible in part by the Hinckley Institute's Wayne Owens Fund. I'm Ross Chambliss. Thanks for listening.